1983, we're interviewing Florence Phelan Kenny of World War I, who served in London, the British VAD, from June 1918 to 1919.
Florence? What's the full name of the branch of the service?
VAD was Volunteer Army Division. British.
And you served in London, correct?
Yes.
What influenced you to join?
There was some publicity in the newspapers in Syracuse, New York, where I lived and where I went to Syracuse University, trying to go. And it was that Mrs. Hazard, a very wealthy woman, that Arm & Hammer business that's on everybody's shelf, had received a request from a great surgeon in London that they were having difficulty and there was a shortage of nurses' aides. They didn't need to be trained nurses, but they needed them to be with an aide and a help to the real nurses, registered nurses. So I thought it would be nice. I thought I'd like to go. And I was taking voice lessons. The hospitals in Syracuse contacted the university and said they would be delighted to give us any little training as to what a nurse's aide was expected to do or would be asked to do, which we did. And many thought that Mrs. Hazard financed it, the trip, and each girl paid her own way to New York City, where we flew from where we flew, to London.
Where you took the train?
Yeah. We weren't flying in those days.
Were you?
We didn't take a train to London.
No, but to New York.
Yes.
You took a train to New York.
I guess. Right. I don't know if we took it. Doesn't matter.
It's not a great deal. Only you didn't fly.
Well, then
I don't think. Back in those days. So you were joined by other women.
Yes. And we took the
steamship.
We took the steamship and we were together for the first time. Three or four from the president's office plus us. When we reached England.
How many days did it take you to go over? Do you recall?
I don't remember. And when we got there, there was a big
reception.
A big
parade.
There was a big wagon sort of thing with somebody up, making a big noise, and we were taken right to the hospital first, and they said, "This is where we're going to be. But stay on, we're going to drive around town." And we had all sorts of applause and hi, hello, and God bless you, and all this sort of thing. It was the most inspiring thing that could happen to anybody. It was beautiful. So, and our whole stay there, we were really spoiled. They said something spoiled rotten. And the American Women's Club in London gave us cards to come at any time without any appointments, and we could entertain there if we chose to. And they put on a reception for us alone, and so many things were done for us.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody got a little tired out, because whenever we were given a rest period, when we were supposed to rest, we get out on the street and go someplace and see something and say to each other, did you see so-and-so, you go so-and-so. And we wore ourselves out, and when it came time, when there was armistice, about six or seven of the girls were not fit to travel home. They were so exhausted, and they couldn't get a passport to come home. They weren't fit to travel. And I was one of those that went to a stand to rest. And the night of the war was over, and there was a big celebration all over London, all over the world, I guess. In the sand where I was, the British, it was all for, just for officers, this sand. It was a rest home for them. All went to the living room, and they played hymns. And they sang and played hymns and more and more and more. And when this was over, one of them said, thank God there were no Americans here. If they'd been here, they would have made ballyhoo. And you see, I wasn't talking much. I had some trouble with my throat. And if I talked a little, they'd know, of course, I was American. You talk so differently. But I wasn't saying a word. I just smiled and laughed at all. He says, thank God we had no Americans.
To back up a little bit, what was the name of the hospital where you worked?
Oh, Endless Street Military Hospital.
I believe it's on that thing.
Yes, it is. Endless Street Military Hospital.
Yeah.
And
it was right downtown across from the British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a temptation every minute we had to run around and see everything. We made a good job of that, but we...
Did you live at the hospital?
Yes, we lived at the hospital. We had very nice accommodations, very nice. We all had a separate bed and a dresser and what have you, and everything was very nice and good meals.
Did you wear a uniform?
And we, when we were on duty as a nurse's aide, yes. But we had uniforms made to measure. And I have a picture here. What did I do with it? This is the uniform. Now the British VADs mostly were society girls. It was a rather snooty, exclusive group of people. To get into the VAD was kind of something. And we thought, you know, one was a size 12, 14, and 16, like we would have done here in America and in anything of a military nature. No, we had to go to so-and-so, one of the finest places there. And these costumes, this outfit here, all made to your own particular measure. Tailor-made and custom-made.
What color were they? What color were they, Drake?
A light brown with a dark brown trim.
Did you wear this when you went out on the street?
Oh, yes.
Now, you said
we had to wear them. We wore none of our own clothes.
Mm-hmm.
We were told not to even take them except underwear and stuff like that.
You don't recall getting any salary or anything while you were there?
We got our living. And show you a lot of entertainment. So many organizations there in London. And once a month, the hospital would sing. They were invited to go to Windsor Castle. And they saved six or seven or eight of them and send two girls to escort them
to get them there. And so often, they come to count them when they were going to go in to Windsor Castle. And they find they were short, a man or two, a couple of them, that wants to go in a bar someplace, and they just kind of lost them. So we heard a lot of talking. We've been warned, leaving the hospital, that we must be very careful and keep counting them all the time to be sure we get the full number there, because it was something to go there to tea. It wasn't just to go in and go along the line and shake hands and be out the door and gone. It was more than that, much more intimate and much more cozy. And we had hot tea and sandwiches and goodies and so forth, a little, almost a little luncheon. And at the table where I was sitting with my group, was Princess Alice. There was a hostess at each table, somebody connected with the king. It was King George, wasn't it? And Elizabeth.
No, Mary.
Mary. And so I kept my mouth shut, listened, and took in everything. And after which he says, "How are you Americans enjoying your stay here?"
Was that King George himself?
No, no, it was Princess Alice. She was the hostess at the table around which we were sitting. And I said, "How did you know I was an American?" She had that beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
"Oh," she says, "your boots, all I have to do is look down at your feet." She says, "You Americans have such lovely and shoes." So, when we left the hospital to go, instead of the two girls being at the head and counting them back now and then, I suggested one of them would be at the head and one would be at the top, at the rear, and keep counting them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And after that time, we didn't lose anybody. We all stayed together, and our count was right. And at the hospital, they set up that idea that whenever any more were taken, they'd always have somebody at the rear.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you discharged over in England?
Mm-hmm.
And how long did you stay, and what did you do?
We were sent to those that were up and going on their feet. I don't know what they did. They were able to come home. But they were asked if they would go on to France. A couple of them went on to France, doing the same sort of work. But those of us that were in the sand, we told when we were fit to travel, we just go home. We attend to our own transportation at the round trip. And this physician, I wasn't eating well and I lost a lot of weight. And he says, "I'm going to come in and watch you eat your meals, and you'll never get out of this place till you clean your trays every night." He says, "You're going to stay here just as long as you don't eat. If you like staying here, don't eat. We'll have you a long time." And he says, "I'm coming in. I'm not going to depend on any nurse saying you cleaned your tray." He did. Came in for two or three nights and I ate it all. Well, he said, "Now you stay with it. You can eat your way home. Eat your way home." And I sure didn't. I haven't stopped eating since.
Did you enjoy the British food?
No.
Did you go to many restaurants?
Mm-hmm. We entertained so many of the girls that were doing the kind of work we did, VADs, that were British. Invited us to their homes. They invited us to things. We were being entertained left and right. And I took
on top of the girls. I forget that big hotel, that very nicest one right in the heart of everything in London, to have cocktails. And she wrote home to her people who lived on the outskirts that I had done this. So then when I went to her parents' home and had a big estate, her mother took me aside and says, please, don't take any of our British girls to any cocktail bars. You don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. She says, it's appreciated. You wanted to do something nice, but no, no good. And we were spoiled, really. Everybody did so much. And on the streets, of course, there were other VADs dressed up. But whenever we got to sitting down any place or talking, and they knew that we were the ones, and they were played up, we had some very nice. I have some pictures at home that were taken there by the newspapers of these Americans that had come to the paper, the newspapers, something to make a spurt about.
Did we return? What, did you go to work or back to school or?
No, I rested, got nice and rested, and then I got married. It was the easiest way out.
Now you joined them. Did you work before you came to California?
No, I never.
Never, and you came to California?
And I have since I got reborn.
Did you live in New York City?
No. I stayed there with relatives. I had relatives then, but they're all dead and gone a long time ago.
And that's where you became acquainted with the WSO, wasn't it, to New York?
I read in the newspapers. In the newspapers in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
About something that was going on in some hotel at Benefit. And it was for people who were the Women's Overseas Service League and could be reached by blah, blah, and I called them up. And this Mrs. Duncan called me up, and she says, I want you to come to my apartment, and we'll have a little cup of tea or a drink or something, and tell me about your experience. And I went to her, and that was the beginning of my getting into the Women's Overseas Service League.
Well, you joined the Los Angeles unit in 1942.
Did I?
And did you join immediately after you got here, or when did you come to California?
Well, I joined the New York unit first. Of course, I know I wasn't going to be there and go to meetings, but it's an expression of gratitude. I thought it would be nice to belong. I joined that and kept up that membership. I haven't kept it up now, except for the occasional holiday gifts.
Then you joined Los Angeles. When did you come to Los Angeles? The same year you joined? Or had you been to?
I came right home. Really, it just stopped a little bit in New York City, about maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then came home to Syracuse? To Syracuse.
Yes, but you got to California, and I'm trying to establish when you moved to California.
Oh. I can't remember the year.
Before the Depression?
Which Depression? 1929. The Big Depression. I don't remember. You were married then when you came to California, right? You were married when you came.